To Novel Finds, the podcast where we talk about your favorite books, our favorite books, and everything in between. Hey, it's me, Maggie, and I am here with an author interview. I'm so excited to be chatting with Elena Dillon all about her new book, Eyes Turned Skyward. Elena, how are you doing?
I'm so great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here. I'm so excited to talk about your book. I really enjoyed reading it. Our listeners know I'm a really big fan of historical fiction, especially when it's centered around really strong female characters. And I just can't wait to get started, chat all about your book. So to sort of get started with a nice little warm-up question, do you have a favorite snack and drink combination that you have while you're writing?
So I always write in the morning. So I'm really lucky that my husband's schedule allows me to work for 3 hours every morning. And I pretty much hit the keyboard at 8:15. So I always have coffee by my side. And like that has nice. Kind of become like a ritual, you know, like you associate coffee with thinking and coffee with working. And so like, it'd be very strange not to have coffee and write at the same time. If I was going to choose a snack that like an indulgence snack, it'd be like Reese's peanut butter cups. but if I was doing healthy, I have like Lara bars to try to keep the protein up.
That's very healthy. That's incredible. Yeah.
But yeah, it would. I'm really craving the chocolate peanut butter combo.
I feel that. I think it just gets your brain working, having a little bit of chocolate, some caffeine. And
it's protein, too.
That's true. It has peanut butter. So who are we to say otherwise?
Basically health food. Yeah.
Well, Elena, would you mind telling us a little bit about yourself as an author and then just a brief synopsis of the book?
Sure. So I tend to write about women who are facing obstacles and injustices that are exist in the world. So like whenever I kind of stumble upon something that enrages me or that I think maybe hasn't gotten enough attention, I just like inhale the research about it, trying to learn as much as I can. And then I turn it into like a fictional story that, you know, might serve as like an education to readers, but mainly just like trying to kind of answer the questions that I had about the issue when I first heard about it, or not even answer questions, but ask questions anyway. So Eyes Turned Skyward is about a woman Air Force service pilot during World War II and her daughter 60 years later. It's a dual timeline story. And the women Air Force service pilots, just to sum it up quickly, were a group who were trained to fly all types of military aircraft that were on the market at the time to relieve men from domestic flight duties and to allow them to go overseas. And they trained the same as the men. They stayed in the same barracks as the men. They were held to the highest accountability. They were experts and skilled, and people doubted that they can do it and that they could do it. And they rose to the occasion and proved those doubters wrong. And there had kind of been this understanding that they would be folded into the military eventually. But when the war slowed down, they were dismissed and sent home without any benefits. And people kind of forgot about them literally until 30 years after the war, when the Air Force announced for the first time that women were flying, and that was not true. But even so, people still don't know about them. And so, the book is about, it goes from World War II, where with the following the flyer, then to 60 years later, when her daughter realizes that her mother had served in the war, and she and her mother have a kind of a contentious relationship, and she's providing for her as her health is failing, and they have the kind of complicated history that all begins to make sense as she finds out about her mother's secret.
Yeah, incredible. This book is really, really great, you guys. I, as I've said, love historical fiction, and I just think there's something really special about sharing a story that's not often shared, especially when it comes to like women being introduced into the military in a way and not having the same opportunities. I wanted to follow up on the fact that this novel has two different storylines, mother and daughter, Peggy and Kathy. And I want to know, what made you decide to make it a dual protagonist story, and what sort of went into that type of storytelling?
Yeah. So it initially wasn't. So that I started writing the book 10 years ago. And I know that because I got a Facebook memory in October when the book came out that I had just started it like almost perfectly 10 years earlier. So for a long time, it was just the World War II story. And I had a few agents representing it. We went out to a lot of all the big publishers. I had a lot of editors read it and say nice things, but it just never landed. And, so I just kind of kept returning to it over the course of the decade. I just wasn't getting it right. And then, Mercy House came out and The Happiest Girl came out. And, I was kind of establishing like a certain type of novelist. And mm-hmm. then when I was looking for my next project or considering what I was going to write next, I didn't want to let these women go. So I was like, how could I kind of make this into a book that like feels more like who I am as a writer now? And so it occurred to me to introduce this dual timeline, which I hadn't really done before. But I had always been like compelled or wondering about what would happen at the end of the World War II story. Cause in the original, it just ended when the war ended and she was dismissed and disappointed and betrayed and had all these feelings, but like what happened then when she went home, you know, and like, and what like lived this domestic life as a military wife, like following her husband around the world while he pursued the dreams that she wanted to live. And how would she then, you know, act as a mother, especially if she had a daughter who she hoped would pursue the ambitions that she didn't have the opportunity to. And what would happen to her daughter if she didn't feel that she was ambitious herself? And like kind of what tension would that create? And I was just like really interested in, you know, how the regrets of a person could be in like could be passed down to the next generation, especially if these regrets weren't discussed and weren't transparent. So then I started kind of writing about Kathy's timeline. And I was also interested in like in how misogyny that was very apparent during World War II would have changed but not disappeared, and how her daughter might be kind of confronting similar like obstacles of sexism, and how that would look different and the same.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's so incredible. I'm so curious to know what sort of inspired you to make this story something that was almost about generational pain, and how did creating this mother-daughter complex or this mother-daughter relationship, do you feel like it's something that comes up a lot in your storytelling, is these types of relationships?
Yeah. I mean, now that I'm looking back, so Mercy House, the main character, the nun, also had a complicated relationship with her father in that case and her mother. And she was working through that as well. And then in The Happiest Girl in the World, it was a young gymnast, but it was a alternating point of views with her mother, and like her mother pushing her in ways that maybe she didn't want to be pushed, or living vicariously through her. And so, yeah, it does seem to be like a theme that I carry from one book to the next, is like this, you know, the complicated relationship between parent and child. But I mean, I guess, you know, every character has a parent in some, you know, like whether it's the absence of a parent or the presence of a parent, and like that shapes them. And that is so relevant to who they are as a person. It's so like such a formative, you know, relationship. So that, I guess that's on the front of my mind, in general, but then like also I'm a new parent myself. So, maybe that influences me too. Like with The Happiest Girl, I started that like right when we were trying to have a kid, my first, I have two now. And then, Eyes Turn Skyward, I suggested, I started working on the more contemporary timeline when I already had a child. And then, when we were trying to have a second. So like, as I'm building family, maybe family is on my mind more than ever. Yeah. But in general, I think, you know, parent child relationships must be important to every single character out there.
No, definitely. I think it grounds storytelling when you think about where they came from and where their parents came from. And I think what is so interesting about Eyes Turn Skyward is how, you know, even though she didn't live through what her mother lived through, there's sort of this residual pain that because of what Peggy went through and how it affected her life then affects Kathy in ways that I think Kathy doesn't even realize in the beginning.
Right.
And I think that that's such astounding storytelling, because I think it can take us such a long time to realize who we are, but then also how our parents have affected us.
Sure. Yeah. Ways. Like I think parenting is often a reaction to like your own childhood or your own experiences. So I think like Peggy's experience was always in the room when she was raising her children, and they just didn't realize what that shape was. You know, like they probably just like sensed the presence and, but nobody spoke of it. And so I think when Kathy realized what her mother had been holding back, it was almost a relief to have some sort of explanation for like what seemed to be plaguing her mother her whole life.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I don't want to put you on the spot, so don't answer if you totally don't want to, but I'm curious to know if the military has played a role in your life, or do you know, have you had family members or people that you know who have gone through, of course, not the same, because maybe it wasn't World War II, but similar experiences?
So not really specifically. I mean, both of my grandfathers are veterans. I think like so many of our grandparents were, but it didn't seem to influence my life anyway. But I did in writing this book, I reached out to the granddaughter of a WASP, who is like a huge WASP advocate, and like her grandmother, when she died, always wanted to be buried in Arlington. And that was supposed to be one of their rights as becoming veterans in the 70s. But when they tried to bury her, she was denied. And so like this granddaughter was a lawyer and like started this whole battle to get her mother or her grandmother buried there. I've had the privilege of giving her this book and having her read it and hearing her response and then having a discussion with her about her grandmother's experience and everything. And so it was really interesting to hear like the perspective, you know, like the real legacy of the WASP, like a real life example of it. And like what she shared, and she did share that she had met the ancestors of a WASP who the WASP had never spoken of her service. Like it was a complete secret.
Wow.
And it wasn't, you know, it just wasn't unusual like for that generation to like, to not speak of pain and to not speak of like if they'd seen tragedy. So I think to have that kind of haunting exist is not far-fetched at all and probably happened more often than we would think.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's just absolutely incredible. So I'm curious to know, and I know there are sort of the two featured female characters, but there are loads of incredible three-dimensional characters in this story. And I want to know, do you have a favorite character? And if it's different, do you have one that you feel like you relate to the most?
Georgia was a very fun character to write. Like anyone that has a really vibrant voice, and she's so sassy and like really came alive on the page. But I was like very, and I love writing like an old, like crabby woman. So the old version of Peggy was really fun to write. I don't know why I'm just like drawn to that voice. But I relate to a lot of Kathy too. I mean, in a way, I think I put a little bit of myself in every single character. So like when I think it's so hard to pick a favorite, like I really relate to, you know, Kathy's dynamics with like her brothers and her parents, and like trying to feeling like you're like the heart of the family, and like also like that all the responsibility's on you, and trying to balance that out, and like loving everybody so fiercely, but also, you know, kind of resenting that all of the load is dropped onto you and being in charge of all that emotional labor. I also, you know, really feel for Neil, and like, I don't know, I think like I feel for so many of them, but Peggy's old lady voice was like, I just love whenever she was able to speak, I was like, oh my gosh, what is she going to say? And then Georgia was just a lot of fun.
Yeah. I love characters similar to Georgia who just feel so full of life.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I felt so drawn to all of the women too in Peggy's storyline. I just wanted to be around them and really get to know them and know why they made these big decisions in their lives. I just thought they were so interesting.
Yeah. It was really fun to just be in the bay with them. Like, because they were such exceptional women. You know, like any woman at that time who could fly was in itself such a rarity. I mean, still to this day, like not a lot of women fly. But then to have excelled and be so good at flying that you made the program. I mean, like 25,000 flyers applied and only 1,000 graduated. So these were like really the best of the best. And like, they probably, when they landed there, just felt like looking around and seeing people that could do what they, that do things that they do, that they thought nobody else could, you know, like they, you finally arrived home in a way, and like you're in a tribe, and like, like having this camaraderie with people that are like-minded that you'll never have again. And like, that was such a loss when then it was cut off so prematurely. So yeah, to be able to sit in a room with them and watch them like have fun when they were also so challenged and, you know, afraid, but excited. And like, there was, it was just like a really special time.
Yeah. It definitely had, as you were saying, that found family feel. Like when you meet people who just have the exact same interests as you and you don't even need to try.
Yeah.
And it was just, even though they were all so different. Yeah. It was just a really special connection that they all shared. So Elena, I'm so curious to know, do you have a favorite line or section of your book or something that just sticks out to you every time you think about it?
I'd like to say that I take care with all my writing, but like I take like very special care with the ending, because it just feels like it's the final, like everything has been leading up to this, you know, and it's kind of, I feel like it's my responsibility to like reflect in a way or like draw it all together. So I do like that, and I returned to that paragraph like to see, just to make sure that it's not like giving away anything, and it's not really, but like I think that it does kind of just have an image that ties it up, and it like it just feels emotionally satisfying to me. Do you want me to read it?
Oh, I would love that. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So it ends, and I don't think this is a spoiler alert because it's just like history, but so it ends at the Congressional Medal Ceremony where like Peggy is receiving her long awaited recognition. So she's received the medal now. The medal weighted her palm, but her head felt suddenly light, like her tethers had been cut, like she'd spun herself dizzy. Like she no longer answered to the forces of gravity, like her heart pumped fast and free. Her future was at her back and her past was before her, and she felt as frail and fleeting as she was, but also, yes, it was as real as anything, like she could stand up and fly.
I love that. I do. A great last line, like really, really great last line. So I know that you have already mentioned it a little bit, sort of instances that you read about that inspire you to write. And Eyes Turned Skyward had sort of been an idea that you had been mulling over or you had put away and 10 years later came back to it. But I'm curious to know, sort of specifically, when you started the process for this book, what came to you first in terms of the story?
So 10 years ago, I was looking for another project, like another, the next book that I would write. And often I do that just by kind of like feeling around for like an instance in history. Usually it's more recent history, but at the time I thought that I was going to write about my great aunt Peggy, and only the name stuck, but ultimately who went in the 50s, traveled across country from New York to California with her girlfriends to become a nurse. And like, that seemed to me like such an unusual thing to do at the time. So I was just kind of like feeling around the internet for the mood of the 50s, because I had never written a real historical piece before, and just kind of seeing if like I liked the culture of the time and like the dress and like, you know, what was going on. And yeah. I was just researching kind of blindly, and I kept like following Wikipedia links, you know, back and back and back until I was now in the 40s and then during the World War II period. And I just stumbled that way upon the women Air Force service pilots, and I had never heard of them before. And when I read about them, I just couldn't believe that like they weren't just like conversational topics, like that people, we just know about them as part of World War II. And you know, that was 10 years ago in 2012. So it was after the Congressional Gold Medal Ceremony. So like the peak of their recognition had just happened, and still I had never heard about them. So that struck me as like maybe, you know, some material that was deserving of excavation. So that's what initially drew me in.
That's amazing. Do you find that historical fiction has been a really important genre to you your entire life?
So I I tend toward more contemporary stories, I think. I mean, I certainly delve into historical fiction, and I guess it depends, like, what you consider historical fiction. Like, when I think about it, like, in a way, like, my previous two novels are also historical fiction, because they're based on real things that happened. It's just that it happened in, like, 2010, and so it's, like, very recent history. So in that way, perhaps I have always been drawn to historical fiction, but usually it's more, like, recent history, not going quite so far back as 1950s. But like, if you call like The Great Believers by Rebecca Malakai, is that how you pronounce her last name?
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yes.
Yeah. Right. Like that had to do with the AIDS epidemic and like the 1980s mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So like, I love like books that are kind of in the heat of a moment. It just for me tends to be kind of like a more recent moment.
Yeah. Now that you've had success with Eyes Turn Skyward, do you think you'll start looking for to write historical fiction set earlier in time?
So I have two other projects that are on the back burner that I'm going to, I'm determined to get up and running. And those are also kind of like recent moments. So So those are like within the last 15 years. So like one's about like school, like the school shooting issue. And another one is about the opioid epidemic. So I'm like still kind of living in this, mm-hmm. this kind of recent history, but I wouldn't, be opposed to if I found a story that grabbed me that I think deserves the attention, I would certainly try this again. Although I have to say that it does take a special skill to write historical fiction. It's like so much research and like to find that voice and, it's like you really have to have that muscle primed and ready to go.
Yeah, I believe that when you read a good one, like a good historical fiction, you don't even notice.
Yeah.
Because all the work has been done. But I think you probably notice when you read a historical fiction that hasn't been well researched.
Yeah, maybe. Or like they're trying to like do the voice too hard or something. You know, like it's hard to find that balance where you're like, hey, this is a different time.
Right.
Without like pounding over the head.
So just kind of a fun question, but if you could, would you have taken the opportunity to be one of those first female pilots?
I wish I could say yes, but the truth probably is no, because it's like so much pressure and I'm really not somebody that rises to the pressure. I don't think I'd like to think that I am, but I think truthfully I like am much better in a circumstance in which I can like do something and then highlight it all and delete it and try it again, you know? That's kind of more my speed.
It's that's like, okay.
You can't really revise a flight.
No, I'm afraid not. Well, do you have any authors or storytellers that have really inspired your writing?
My favorite book probably is Olive Kittredge by Elizabeth Strout. And it's probably because I've read it so many times, in teaching, like I it was the book that I was teaching in my college courses. But she, I just loved how gritty and, unpleasant Olive often was. And like the author was never afraid to like turn away from that unpleasantness or to shield the reader from it. Or to gloss her over. And so much, especially in my earlier side of the career, I heard from like editors and agents and things that my characters were just too unlikable. And that always annoyed me because humans are unlikable sometimes. Like that's what makes them human. And I doubted that, you know, male characters would be held up to such scrutiny. Like it kind of felt to me that like we were looking for flawed heroines, but only flawed in the right ways, you know, like we wanted them to have like, you know, to be too fiery and like, you know, like until, I don't know, to be, I don't even know what the right ones are, but like, we didn't want them to be grumpy and unpleasant and selfish and, you know, in like have infidelities or things like that. So like, any time that I found a character that broke those rules was just kind of like an inspiration. So Olive Kittredge for sure. And then, Ann Patchett just seems to have found this, like, is just like that magical spot of literary and with commercial success, you know, like she's like a beautiful writer, but also like her stories are so compelling and fast paced and her characters come alive. And then, but recently, I for the first time finished a book and then like went back to the beginning and read it all again, or to be honest. Wow. I listened to it. So, so just listen to it all again. And that was Night Bitch by Rachel Yoder.
Yes.
Yeah, it was just like, and I'm usually not drawn to that kind of genre. Like the premise, I was kind of skeptical, but you know, when I heard all the acclaim she was getting, I wanted to give it a try, especially since it was about like an unsatisfied mother, which has just been like on my mind a lot. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was just like kind of a life-changing book in a way, or like it was just so innovative and fresh and like nothing like that has been done before, but also just universally resonating.
Yeah.
It was so cool.
That book, you know, you read something and it just feels different and yeah. You can't really explain it, but it's just not like anything else that you've read.
Right.
Yeah.
There's been nothing like it and there will be nothing like it. Yeah. There might be people that tried to like copycat it now, but I don't, but like, yeah, they'll just fall short. There was just like a very special book. I'm really interested to see the adaptation with Amy Adams that's coming out.
Yeah, me too. Very excited. I'm a big Amy Adams gal. So,
what about you? What's been a life like a book that's really stood out to you this year?
Oh, that is a great question. I would say one of the biggest books that really struck me, honestly, was this young adult book I read called Firekeeper's Daughter. And it's young adult mystery thriller about an Ojibwe woman who uses the knowledge of her culture and chemistry to sort of solve these crimes that have been happening in her community.
Oh, cool.
It was just, I just have not read anything like that. And then Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. I can't stop talking about this book. Have you read that one?
No.
Oh, it's by Gabrielle Zevin. And it spans 30 years and it's about the relationship between these two people who create a video game empire. And it's about their friendship and ambition and the love they have for these games and how it gets in the way of their relationship. It's very interesting. Yeah. So I know you said your favorite book is by Elizabeth Strout. Is it Olive Kittredge?
Mm-hmm.
What is that about?
So it's about Olive, who is this, I think it follows her from probably when she's in her 40s to when she's in her 70s. And it's really like a collection of short stories in novel form. And it follows like all the different residents of this town in Maine. So we're on this like kind of stormy coast of Maine. And Olive is like, her character is really reflected in that setting. But she's like a depressed woman who like is unsatisfied with her lot in life and has a really doting husband, but that she doesn't quite appreciate until it's too late. And she just like doesn't embrace joy the way that she should at the beginning. Yeah. And then like kind of follows her through her life circumstances over the last like 30 years, which is like an unusual time period to grab a character from like 40 to 70 and kind of shows how people are still capable of change. And it's not this like complete turnaround. It's not an unrealistic change. It's kind of this like gradual awakening to how life, she can't let life and joys and love pass her by. And it rotates around different townspeople and kind of shows how she has played a role in their life and their perceptions of her. And, you know, that she really does have a heart underneath her gruff exterior. And and it's just beautifully written. Like Elizabeth Strout has this way of just capturing a character in like a very succinct detail. And it's like not a detail that you would expect. And like, she just says it and you understand completely. Like one that always stood out to me, and when I met Elizabeth Strout once, and this is like the detail that I told her stands out to me, it was that like Olive Kittredge was at a dentist office and she was just like so in need of human connection that when the dentist like gently touched her jaw, like she almost like tears what came to her eyes. Like, and it just like, it just reminded me of like that touch that a dentist has on your jaw that is often so tender, you know, and like, but I had never really noticed that before. So yeah, things like that where like she just like captures life in a moment.
Yeah. I mean, she is just an astounding author. I haven't read anything by her, but I know so much of her work has been shortlisted and won awards, and she's been on my radar for so long. I definitely need to get into her.
Yeah. And now there's a sequel to Olive. So if you,
if
you are attached to that character, there is Olive again that came out like 2 years ago.
So, oh, yeah. Amazing. That is good to know. I will. I definitely need to check them out. Well, Elena, I'm genuinely so sorry to say that our time is coming to a close. But do you have any final thoughts, and where can people find you if they're interested in following your writing journey?
Yeah. So I'm probably best on social media on Instagram. So that's Elena, Elena.Dillon. And Twitter is the Elena Dillon. And so is Facebook, I think. But I'm really not as good there. I wish. But now Twitter might be like closing. So
who knows?
Need to have built up a place there. And then you can follow my news, like you could join my newsletter thing on my website,
elena.dillon.com.
Yeah.
If you guys are interested in following Elena, I will link her Instagram and her website to this episode's information. And Elena, one final question. Do you have a favorite independent bookshop that I can link that sells your books?
Oh, sure. So I just recently did a signing at the Bookshop of Beverly Farms in Beverly, MA. So they probably still have signed copies there. So people can, if they want to order from there, I'm sure, you know, they'd be able to ship them a signed copy.
Perfect. I will link that bookshop as well. And I hope you guys, I really hope you guys take a peek at this book. It was one of my favorite reads of the year. It was so much fun and just really compassionate and really great storytelling. And Elena, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so fun.
Well, we heckin' did it, you guys. Thank you so much for listening. If you like what you heard, share us with your other bookish friends and family. And if you're listening with Spotify or Apple Podcasts, be sure to rate and review the show. I am off to do my newest video for our Patreon. I am now doing a series where I will be talking about all the books that I am currently reading every single month, as I no longer have an Instagram to post about them. And if you are interested in joining our Novel Finds community on the Patreon, please follow the link in our bio. And be sure to follow us on Instagram at Novel Finds Podcast. Thank you so much for being a novel friend. We will see you all next week.